What is going on, people? Welcome to another episode of Daniel's Den. I'm your host, Daniel Pasley. Got two familiar guests back in the building. Got OP and Philly Phil. We're going to discuss a lot of things, in a brief manner. I'm just going to start off with the Kings and the Pelicans. You know, want to pour one out for them, obviously. Two teams, especially the Kings, a lot of people thought they were making some progress, but obviously with Luke Walton, a lot of people feel a lot of ways about the way he runs his schemes. And, of course, with the Pelicans, we saw, you know, Lonzo Ball really struggle from the floor. Zion Williamson play restricted minutes. Just a team that, despite having some, some good signs from Brandon Ingram, some promising things from him, restricted free agent, just not there yet. What were your takes on those two teams in the bubble?
Omar.
Okay. like we talked about this before, the Pelicans to me just seem like the way they were restricting Zion's minutes, I'm assuming just because he wasn't in the kind of shape necessary to play big time minutes, and the way Lonzo struggled, they almost seemed like they were just using this time to like get some games in. It didn't look like they were taking it as serious as you think, because they're just so much better with Zion at the five. But he still has so much room to grow defensively. In that last game against the Spurs, Jakob kind of gave him some problems where he just kind of loses track of his guy. When it comes to the Kings, like, you know, you watch their lineup and, you know, it's weird vibe. We have Luke Walton, who, I'm not a huge fan of for this time with the Lakers. Him and Buddy Hield had that little beef earlier in the year. He doesn't seem to really want to play him, even though he's clearly like their best like wing option that they have in crunch time situations. I hold that whole front office has always seemed to be a mess. And I feel bad for De'Aaron Fox because I think that kid's a stud, but they're not real. They weren't built for it. Good luck for next year. And I think New Orleans, same thing. New Orleans will be back next year. They just need the games and the reps. So.
Oh yeah. What about you, Phil? You got any
teams? Yeah, I don't got too much to say, because honestly, I'm gonna be the bad guy and the hater of the year, because honestly, like, I don't even know why we're really talking about these two teams, because they let their teams down big time this year, man. And I'm gonna start off with that Lonzo Ball. I know you guys like Lonzo Ball a lot. You guys know how much I can't stand him. I think he's overrated. And until they really upgraded that position, I think they're going to be hovering around at best that 8th and 7th spot. As for Sacramento, let's just go into the next segment, because we're going to be wasting our time talking about Sacramento right now, man. I'd have nothing good to say about them. My mom told me if I have nothing good to say, I better not say anything at all. So let's go.
Well, I definitely agree with you on that, especially, you know, all three of us have seen, you know, Sacramento at their best. It was a short window, obviously. For me, being first years of me watching basketball, those Sacramento teams are great. But obviously, like Omar said, front office has really been in a downward spiral in terms of, you know, direction and who's in charge. But moving on to a team that actually has been surpassing expectations, the Phoenix Suns, going 6-0, the only undefeated team. That's right, the only undefeated team in the bubble. Devin Booker, obviously we know this kid can score 30 points, 6 assists on 50% from the floor, obviously leading the team to wins. What is your take on his play, and what are you guys seeing that's different about this team? And, obviously Phoenix isn't a big-name team the last, 10 years, but obviously they've been relevant as of, the bubble.
Well, I'll start off this time, Omar. I gotta really watch what I say about Phoenix, because I saw what Draymond got fined the other day, and I don't want no parts of that today, boy. But they look good, man. I don't know what they're doing different. It seems like they just figured it out right now. They're playing hard. They're playing as whatever the coach is, the philosophy that he wants them to do, they're doing it. Booker's stepping up. But you know what? Booker's always stepped up. He's been a stud since he came in the league. But it's like every week, every game, they're getting production from someone else, whether it's Cameron Johnson at a UNC or DeAndre Ayton. He's balling. So, big up to Phoenix. They're going to be good. watch out for them next year. They're the up-and-coming team. And, you know, if they can add another player or two in the offseason, another wing, and maybe another stretch big, they're going to be a problem, man. Phoenix is going to be just like back in the 90s.
Mm. Yeah, also a guy that we didn't mention was Mikal Bridges, who has been, he's been pretty good for them. The thing with them with the offseason is there's a couple of factors. DeAndre Ayton got suspended at the beginning of the year because he was on that – was it a Balco suspension he got?
Yeah, 25 games. That's like quarter of the season pretty much.
Quarter of the season he missed the beginning of the year. And that kind of, I think, kind of set them back in the beginning because he's so crucial to what they do, especially out of the pick and roll. And he's an improved post-up player. He's improving on defensively. So that really hurt. The big signing for them was probably Ricky Rubio, as we kind of seen in the
team. Ricky.
With teams in the past. Phoenix teams in the past is that it was kind of on Devin to be something he isn't, which is he's a good passer, but he's not a natural playmaker. He's better off the ball than he is on the ball, and he's more about getting – and, you know, rightfully so. He's the guy that gets buckets. He's dropping 70 in games, right? That guy probably shouldn't be the guy setting the table. So them getting a guy like Ricky Rubio who's, you know, improved some of his set shooting kind of shows you the improvement there. Now, mind you, you know, they are 6-0. Their last – they had that big turnaround shot against Kawhi and PG. PG gets his eyes dotted more than any other elite defender in the league. And more important, but I will say the last game was the game I just watched was really the first full game I watched. And OKC had no Alexander, no Adams, no Gallinari, and no Dennis Schroeder. So just be aware that, you know, that kind of played in. There was a lot of guys who I had never seen. It was a lot of like, who? Like, so, but yeah, they deserve the way they're playing. Devin's doing a lot for them offensively. And they're really attacking. Kelly Oubre seems to have found a place. It looks like you just got to Washington to find your place. Washington seems to be that place for people. But yeah, looking forward to seeing how they do. Hopefully they can maybe knock in and get into the play-in. I don't think they will, but, you know, they can build upon this for next year for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely sure, certain. And I like how you brought up Oubre. And he did have a big year up until he tore his meniscus. For a lot of people, obviously, who follow fantasy, just his three ball is something that he has to improve upon. But I think at times he definitely showed that he could be not really a go-to scorer, but he can definitely be a good complimentary piece to what Ayton and Booker can bring to the table, especially as a guy who can defend. He seems very competitive, and his offensive game has kind of trended in the right direction from what I've seen. But moving on, we're kind of staying in Phoenix. Obviously, at this point in time, this player is in Indiana. TJ Warren. Trade for cash. A lot of
cash people, considerations.
Yeah, cash considerations.
Take it from your chest, man.
Yeah, pretty much a guy that was written off. He did have the thing is, I was looking at his numbers, had very good years in Phoenix. Obviously, they didn't win many games, seemed to improve his three-point shot, especially coming out of NC State. A lot of people kind of envisioned him being a guy that would have trouble figuring it out. But he doesn't shoot high volume, but he shoots it real efficient, especially in this stretch. It's funny because he's 20-4 on the season with 54% shooting from the floor, 40 from three on only three attempts, but obviously pretty efficient, and 82 from the line. But in the bubble, he's been almost like what we saw from Kawhi last year with 35 points. And he's made 1.3 more threes this eight-game stretch, and he's shooting 55% in the bubble. So that goes to show you, it's an eight-game stretch, but obviously while we film this, they are playing the Heat, so that Jimmy Butler beef will be intriguing to see. But what are your takes on what you guys have seen from not him and also that Indiana team, who a lot of people thought with Sabonis getting hurt that they would be kind of like what Philly's got into?
So a couple of things I've noticed from him specifically with Sabonis going out. Nate McMillan, a guy we all know is a really great coach, always kind of has been from the Portland days. His team's always played defense. And he's kind of one of those guys where if you don't play defense, you're not playing. And TJ's been better than he was on the defensive end in than he has been from Phoenix to Indiana, and that could just be expectations and Phoenix kind of having a mess. But a lot of his minutes seem to be coming at the four, which was a really good adjustment for them. There's a lot of guys who are either not quick enough to guard TJ, and he's been able to attack them a lot. And then when they get a switch and he gets a smaller guy, you saw it against the Lakers a lot. He was really just killing whoever it was. And he's really good on the pick and roll. He gets those 1-2 pull-ups. And if your hand is down, if you're coming off late, if you're not hedging hard enough, he's going to make you pay. He's just an official bucket getter. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, them getting Victor back, who was kind of up in the air, right? We didn't know whether he was going to be there. He wasn't sure. He was worried about his quad. So that was kind of a big impact too. He's been amazing, TJ. And, you know, it's good to see. The one thing about the bubbles, getting the chance to see a lot of the guys, the league itself is getting to display some of our lesser known stars. And it's good seeing a guy like TJ get to shine under Nate McMillan. I worry about them moving forward. Next year, what kind of team will they be? What's their ceiling? Because they look like they're going to be stuck at that 4 or 5 spot without a trade or a move. But I do like what they've been doing so far. Those kids always play hard. Nate always well coached teams. Nate always has. So
yeah, no, I gotta agree on a lot of the points that OP was saying right there, man. Like one thing we knew about Warren was he's always been a scorer from when he came out of North Carolina State. He's been scoring. Last year he was scoring. The year before he was scoring. That's what he does. He scores, right? Mm-hmm. And it seems like, you know, he's in his groove now. It seems like throughout the whole time that everybody was off in quarantining, he was shooting. He was playing basketball still. So I give him props for staying in shape, making sure that everything was crisp with his game. But you know, I think what he's doing right now is what we'd expect Oladipo to be doing right now. You know, being healthy and all. If Oladipo was healthy, these are the type of big numbers and big scoring and how he was kind of doing before he got injured. But at the same time, yeah, Omar is right. Nate McMillan gets him playing. He gets them playing hard. I'm a little worried about them with their bigs. Like Sabonis he's solid, but I don't think Sabonis and Turner can coexist on that team, and they're gonna have to get rid of one of them soon. And I have a feeling it's gonna be Turner.
Oh but yeah,
that's pretty much all I gotta say about these guys, man. I know, yeah. Daniel, you got some strong feelings about this Indianapolis team. Mm-hmm.
I mean, coming into the season, I really thought, you know, it was a real dependent. You kind of said Vic would be obviously that dude. Obviously, push LeBron and the Cavs to 7 games, and a lot of people envisioned him being a guy who could be a very good star in the Eastern Conference. Obviously, injuries have played a role in kind of derailing that. But I think it's funny that you bring me up, because obviously I said I had them as a dark horse team. But I definitely think that Miles Turner, that question definitely has to be answered in the offseason, especially with that Sabonis extension. It's a little intriguing to me what they do. I don't know how much value you get for him. Yeah, he does block shots, but to Omar's point when he talks about guys like the kid from Brooklyn, the big guy. So why am Allen? I forgetting his name? Yeah, so Allen in Brooklyn, he's a guy that he doesn't necessarily lead the league in block shots, but he imposes such a threat that Brooklyn has one of the best defenses in the league. And I don't know if Miles Turner can give a team that type of, you know, rim protection. So I definitely think they have some questions that need to be answered. What about hey, you, Omar?
Sorry, I got a question for y'all, man. So number one, how confident are we that Oladipo can really bounce back from that injury? Because that was a tough injury to bounce back from, number one. And where do you guys see that Indianapolis ceiling next year?
Yeah. To answer your question, that's what I was saying. I with Turner, and I think it kind of comes down to it, Turner is a guy who does a little bit of everything, but not a lot of one thing. He's a good rim protector, not a great one. He's a decent shooter, not a great one. He's never really become what they thought he was going to be, which is the heir apparent, the next evolution of what they had with Hibbert. Kind of a 3 and rim protecting guy, which would, you know, kind of almost like a Serge Ibaka type, but he hasn't really been able to hit on that. If Victor, I don't know much about the physique, you know, the the mechanics of his body. I hope he can come back. It seemed pretty serious, and him saying he's not right, and he even admitted he wasn't right, concerns me a bit. Hopefully he comes back. But even with Turk, let's say we get a healthy Oladipo, you're going like a healthy TJ Warren, healthy Sabonis, that team is probably just on the outside looking into the elite of the East. So to me, they feel like they're a move away. Even with the signing of Malcolm Brogdon, who gives, you know, he's a big guard, is good size, can defend his position very well, can finish. He's a 50-40-90 guy. They have a lot of good, but they don't have anybody who's really great. And it's kind of like a, almost like a watered down version of what we have with the Raptors, where they don't necessarily have a superstar, but they don't have, but they don't have the same depth and versatility that the Raptors do. And I think there's a ceiling for that team. The ceiling to me is they're the fourth and fifth team. They're literally where they are. I think Nate has them playing exactly what they are. He squeezed everything out of the roster. They're like the fourth or fifth best team in the East right now. And they're going to remain the fourth or fifth best team until they make a move.
So I think I was about to ask the same question that you were saying. Well, I was going to ask it to DP. What are they missing? What do they need to get to for you to look at them and say, hey, you know what? These guys are a top three team, and who are they going to have to give up?
Honestly, I think they're going to have to make a decision with Oladipo, if I'm not mistaken. His contract is up, if I'm not mistaken, and he may be a guy. I'm not sure if he's a guy that they may have to, A, move on from, or B, kind of look to your guys' point. If he isn't 100%, how can they, you know, move a Turner for maybe a first-round pick, depending on what type of value he has? And I personally don't think they're there. So they may have to look at the top and say, hey, like, we have Vic. Yes, he isn't 100%, but does he need another, you know, kind of renaissance type situation?
He's on the books for one more deal, so he'll be expiring next year at $21
million. Yeah,
cool. They got some cap issues, because I remember they were trying to offload guys because they couldn't afford to sign people before. Is that right or no?
Yeah, and they also had the Ricky Rubio thing fall through, because that was the original plan. End up getting Malcolm, who I think is probably more upgrade for what they wanted to play.
Yeah,
but the original thing was them getting Ricky Rubio, and then all of a sudden fell through, and they got Malcolm instead, and then they were able to kind of let him go to Phoenix. But yeah, the team, the problem they have is the same. You know, you hear the story Paul George tells about them potentially getting it. He kind of hinted at it being Blake, and them saying, well, we can't afford that. And you know, you know, if they're not going to sign guys, then you got to draft well, and you got to develop well. And who's that young guy that's really come up through the organization? We haven't really seen yet. So that's why I feel like, you know, Nate's going to squeeze the heck out. I hope that they don't fire him and be like, we can get something else out of it, because I feel like he's really maximized this roster.
Who are they going to get? Walton?
You know?
He's the next guy that's going to get fired.
Yeah. And a lot of teams do that, right? Like, now you know, you can speak to this. We all speak to this. Like, you know, the Raptors go 9-8. They bring in when Sam Mitchell's there, they get slapped up by Denver. They bring in Jay Triano, and then they have the worst defense of all time for the rest of the year. So, like, it doesn't necessarily – sometimes your team is your team. So, yeah, going to Indiana, Daniel, I don't know how you feel what they could do. Maybe they need to change how they play.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you can speak to that.
I think it's a good point you bring up, because even looking at how they're so guard dominant, I think they can take a page out of, you know, the Heat's book. You know, obviously we're going to talk about them going forward, but I saw a great video, a great breakdown of Miami. I know obviously this isn't a team that is at the top of the East right now in terms of where they stand, but in terms of their offense and the way they're able to dribble, drive, create open shots, run a lot of hammer screens, I think if you're Indiana, you, especially with the guard play that they have, and Jeremy Lamb, another guy who we didn't mention, he got hurt. Are we going to – if we're in Indiana, if we're in the front office, are we going to say, hey, we got to be more small ball dependent? And especially if Sabonis is – obviously he's not his dad, but if he's shown glimpses of being a great passer, how are we going to be able to use his skills to maybe build around our guards. I think that's something they got to look at and say, you know, Brogdon, Omar mentioned he's a 50-40-90 guy. This year he didn't shoot the ball that well from three. I think some of it was injuries and some of it was maybe just an adjustment in the offense. But I think if they can't make any, obviously, big names splashes just because it's Indiana, I think they got to look at, hey, how can Nate adjust this offense and maybe go with more ball movement, more off-ball screening, kind of looking at Sabonis as being like a point forward type. Because he can score in the post. He has shown the ability to stretch the floor, but I think they got to look at generating more threes in order to open things up, especially with TJ Warren at the four. That's a good combination to have. I think they have some type of personnel to do it, but I think it's going to take definitely another off season for them to kind of sit back and make that adjustment.
Yeah, the only thing I'll add before we move on is I'm just looking at their roster, and it's like, you know, you got the Holiday brother, and then you got your, you know, who's, you know, those guys, you got the Holiday brothers who play hard. And then if we talked about Miles Turner, they're under contract. He's under contract for another 3-4 years before they can let him go. So they're kind of stuck with those two, and they're going to have to try to make it work. So whether it's Nate or whether it's somebody else, they're going to have to make it work with those two in some form or fashion. Now, I wonder if TJ emerging at the four might make them realize that, hey, Turner's going to come off the bench permanently when Sabonis comes back. And then we go small and we try to play as fast as possible, generate more threes like Daniel was saying.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of players who've played well and have impressed, MPJ, obviously a lot of people envision him being a number one pick, was a number one recruit in high school, played for one of the biggest what-if stories of the NBA in Brandon Roy in the state of Washington, was an all-American type of player, obviously going into college, but at Mizzou got hurt, draft comes by, and he's a guy that really dropped. People saw him going top five at worst, and then he ended up dropping outside of the top 10. And a lot of people talked about him being a great scorer, comparing him to KD, and you know, I did a breakdown of him, you know, shameful plug there on the podcast, but just talking about how, yeah, he can score with the ball, but I think he gives a great missing element to what the Nuggets had. And Omar and I discussed this a couple weeks ago when we talked about the Nuggets, when you bump Murray off of his cuts, and Jokic, you're going to have to, you know, score when we're going to send the double, or if we're not going to send the double, are you going to be out of gas? And I think Denver has, you know, shown some glimpses of being a young team, but I think MPJ himself brings that missing element in terms of the way he's able to move off the ball. They can throw him the ball and get him a bucket, a lot of pin downs, a lot of action. I think he's a very good basketball player. A lot of people saw him as a one-on-one player, but you can see that he plays well without the ball and he has a good high release point. And what are your takes on what type of player he can be? You know, he's had a series of 30-point games. Maybe I'll start with Omar. What's your take on MPJ in the bubble?
Just, you know, he's a kid at his size who can get his own shot, which is so, like, you know, underrated. A guy is 6'10", 6'11". He kind of throwing his breakdown that he can kind of take. What the hell's going on? Don't worry, podcast is live. It happens.
Yeah.
He can take those short little fades. He doesn't have to take the big extended fades. He can run you know, the dribble handoff and pin down action with Jokic to his advantage, and he can get inside and finish over guys with size. I don't know what it's going to be like when people can, because, you know, if there's one disadvantage of being that tall is that guys, especially the younger guys that are that big, a guy like KD struggled with this somewhat early in his career. You can kind of get into their body and disrupt their timing with their dribble, and that can kind of throw them off a bit in the beginning until they can figure out the game. But, you know, Mike Malone, give Malone a lot of credit. A guy who, you know, Sacramento, a team that we talked about earlier in the show, doesn't, you know, not having a cleared direction, firing him when they thought their team was, you know, underperforming, find out they were overperforming, and he's only been great, you know, since the 5 years he's been there. But in terms of Michael Porter Jr., if he's he probably another year before he's the guy, but right now they're a dangerous team if they got wings scoring, because, you know, with Jokic's passing, they're going to be a problem, right? Like, he's the, you know, he's the best passing big man we got in basketball right now. And
yeah,
you got a wing scorer, and Jamal can move to where I think he's more naturally suited, a three, a four type of option, with Barton, who can now come off maybe your bench as opposed to being a guy you're really counting on. All of a sudden now they're a team that, that rounds out, and they become more more holistic, more rounded out, more different points of attack where you got to really defend them. As opposed to before, where it's really coming down to, can you get into Jokic's space and can you defend cutters with Michael Porter Jr.? That kind of takes that out of your equation, because you really have to worry about a guy who can come off curls and can face up and can go to the basket. The sky's the limit for that kid if he can stay healthy.
What about you, Phil?
Omar just said everything, man. I don't think there's anything else for me to say, man. Like, sorry, man. You know, no, everything Omar just said was 100% facts, bro. Like, you know, the one thing that I think nobody on our side really takes Denver seriously is because we don't think they're real. They have good pieces. They're a good team. But they're kind of like the Toronto Raptors of America, man. Like, nobody really takes them serious. And until we see them do it, I don't think anyone's really going to take them serious. They could win a whole bunch of games like they have been for the last few years. You know, they're winning 50 games. They're the number two seed in the West. At times, you know, they've hung with all the big dogs in the West. But until we see them win, we're not going to believe them. And I think they just need a real number three or number two guy that can take over games, right? And I think if Porter can be that guy that we expect, it's a 20-point guy. We don't expect him to be, you know, KD or, you know, Giannis or anything. But if he can be a consistent 20-point guy, that team's going to be a problem.
Oh, yeah. And I think to Omar's point earlier, them being a year away, I definitely think them getting out of that first round, I know Utah has been a little deteriorated in terms of, you know, Bogdanovich's, you know, at home recovering from surgery, and then their bench is real depleted. I think that's a pretty easy first-round matchup for them. But moving into the second round, I think playing against the Clippers and having that peskiness of Kawhi and PG, and you guys talked about getting in MPJ's space, I think that's something he has to work on, especially with those types of players, a KD. Yeah, like you said, Phil, he doesn't have to be a KD, but obviously there may be some parts of his game where we may see, okay, you can get in his space and kind of impact his dribbling and impact his shot, sit on that pull-up, stuff like that. And I think that'll be part of not only their growth, but his growth as well. I think, Denver, to me, obviously, with the Melo days, they had a good run. I think it's nearly been 10 years since he's been there. And I really like how, you know, obviously Masai in Toronto since him.
You had to drop Melo in there somehow. You found a way. I'm proud of you. By the way, drop Bella in there. What are you even talking about? Go on.
Thanks. But obviously, to the home bias with Toronto, Masai obviously kind of helped catapult that kind of rebuild. I know they didn't really say, okay, we're going to trade a cornerstone of our franchise and be a bad team like many teams do in many sports. But what they did was they built assets, they acquired picks, they stayed competitive, but now – To your guys' point, if MPJ can be that guy, I think Denver, especially with Bol Bol as well, a guy we haven't really got to talk about, he gives them some rim protection, maybe gives them some versatility. You can play him with Jokic. I mean, that team is scary going forward. But yeah, speaking of teams that obviously have had
Daniel, one thing on Bol Bol, man. When you know you got the same first and last name, you're going to be a problem, boys. So
yeah.
We gotta watch out for my African boys out there, man.
Yeah, that's all good.
As aforementioned, you know, the Heat and the Pacers are playing as we're recording. So I just want to move on to the Miami Heat, a team that Phil obviously had said, hey, I feel like these guys are a contender. I know they're battling for that 4-5 matchup. Maybe they catch third. I think they're kind of shot themselves in the foot with a couple losses. But to me, I kind of talked about it earlier with how this team has been compared to the Spurs in terms of how they have great ball movement. The Spurs team that won in 2014, yeah, they're not necessarily as lethal as them. They have shooters on their team, you know, Duncan Robinson on the year shooting 44% from three, Tyler Hero 38%. You know, guys like that. Jay Crowder's been real big for them, shooting in the 40s from three since he was acquired there. So they do have some spacing. The only problem is, and I was reading a stat on this, Jimmy Butler's been statistically one of the worst shooters in the NBA. And for a guy who's gotten a big deal, that's going to be something that's going to have to be looked at. Because I think, in my opinion, if he's going to be the Jimmy of old, I think they're going to be a team that, with that spacing and that ball movement, and Omar always talks about this with the cute stuff, with the sets, you got to have a guy who's got to get buckets. And if Jimmy's going to give that element to them,
facts,
they can be real deadly. So, Phil, what do you think about this team before we move on to Omar? What's your take on this Miami Heat team?
You know what? Like, you guys already know I like the Miami Heat, even though I can't stand the Miami Heat because you guys made me hate the Miami Heat from a couple years ago. That'll be another conversation. But honestly, like, I just – with me, do you got a go-to guy? Yes, they do. You got outside shooting? Yes, you do. Do you got versatility? Yes, you do. And number one out of all of it, you got a really good coach. And they do have a really good coach. And when you have good coaching in this NBA and you have versatility, you can adapt and play different styles. And that's one thing that we know that Miami can do. You know, they got Bam bring a ball sometimes. They got guys that they could bring off the bench in Dragic and Olenek that can actually score, spread out the floor, shoot the threes. You got Duncan Robinson and Hero that can shoot. You got Jimmy B. Like, they really attack you from so many different ways. They got a nice blend of veterans with a little bit of youth, with a good coach. They can surprise some teams, man. They can really surprise some teams. So, you know, I'm very high on Miami, even though I know a lot of people aren't. Especially when the playoffs come, that's when your big-time players got to step up, and the coaching really got to step up, especially in the playoffs. And I think that's when Miami's really going to flourish.
Yeah, for sure. I you know, they're another guy. They got another coach with, you know, Spo, who's also very creative defensively. The only thing that glares out to me just looking kind of at their numbers is, you know, their plus minus isn't that great. They're only like a plus three all year, which is not amazing. It's not bad, but it's not amazing. Defensively, they're able to do some things, and we've always kind of talked about how they match up versus a team like the Bucks, because they got size at every really position, and they got guys who can get into you. You know, Bam is, you know, another playmaking type of guy who they run a lot of sets for under the high post, a lot of stuff where he's feeding guys and setting up guys. He'll rebound the basketball and bring it up. And, you know, there's not too many fives that can do that in the NBA at his level, right? There's like him and Jokic and Embiid, you're probably the guys you can think of off the top of your head. And of course, Anthony Davis, who doesn't play a lot of five, but plays some five. You know, again, Jimmy's been able to kind of offset his struggling from scoring, from being a really good, you know, he gets to the line a lot.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to get 8 to 9 to 10 free throws a game. And that's kind of been making up. But the thing is, you know, playoff whistles get a little tighter. He needs to shake it off, because there's no way they can go as far as they can without him playing well. They can play all the defense they can in the second round, because it feels like a collision course with them and the Bucks in the second round. In order for that to happen, Jimmy needs to be able to hit shots, tough shots, to loosen it up for Duncan Robinson, to loosen it up for their other shooters, for Nunn, to kind of get their spacing going, and so they can set their defense. Because we all know, against a team like the Bucks, you miss a shot and Giannis is running full out of steam, I don't care who you are, he's going to run you over. So I love what the Heat are. You know, Heat culture, I'm a Heat, you know, I'm a fan of them because of the time that we used to annoy Phil. Respect Spo a lot. He's a guy who adapts his offenses and to his personnel, and he's the team Miami Heat. No matter who's on the team, they will always play hard and they will always play defense. So, yeah.
Speaking of teams, Omar talked about
Miami having to adapt. The Celtics, obviously, with the whole Kyrie saga. shout out to Phil. Obviously, the Raptors laid a goose egg. But as we speak, it looks like, you know, the 905 squad, you know, with Gasol and Siakam has really, you know, laid the hammer on Milwaukee. But obviously, without Giannis, I know people are going to hate and say that. But, hey, man, you win when you win. And I think it's going to be obviously a building win. But before I ramble on, Celtics had to adapt with the whole Kyrie situation. It looked like they were going to be a team. You plug in Kyrie, you plug in Hayward, bam, this team's going to be a 65-win team. Obviously, it wasn't that. You know, go on and on about that. They come back this year. Pretty much they swap Kyrie and Kemba. They've been a team that a lot of people have been questioning their size, and we've talked about them. But I think defensively they've done their part. I think Brad Stevens, as much as people maybe want to compare him to Nick Nurse, especially because he got a lot of praise, whereas Nick Nurse was kind of – he came in and everyone was like, oh, he's an offensive guy. He's an offensive guy. He helped reconstruct the offense. But if he's made his mark defensively, as much as he runs – you know, some good stuff on offense, I think we can all agree that that's been the case. But I think it's also, as much as Boston hasn't really won, I think Brad Stevens done a good job having this team playing good defense. We saw it, obviously, in the Raptor game. I know that's an outlier. I don't think that's going to happen in the playoffs in the seven-game series. But I saw some things that I like from this team defensively. What are your guys' take on the Celtics? I'll let Omar lead with this. I know Phil's a little – you know, still recovering from that game, but, you know, what it is.
I think, you know, a couple of things that's kind of helped them. The last time we talked about how great Jason Tatum is and how good Jaylen Brown's been for them as well. The guy that we didn't really talk about, I think, has been kind of their key, has been Marcus Smart. I think he allows them defensively to do a lot of the damage they're able to do because he's a big guard who can guard some ones, some twos, and occasionally some threes, and allows you to switch even more and not get caught out of position. So even though they don't have, you know, the rim protection, you know, isn't what you would want. Is it Theis or Theis?
Theis.
You know, as solid as he is, he's not the rim protector. He's not, you know, he's not Akeem Olajuwon back there. But at the same time, he allows them they all have guys who can switch, stay with people, avoid switching. If they get switched, you can't really isolate Marcus Smart because he's going to take your point guards out of the rhythm. And I think defensively, they're hard to deal with because they're so athletic and they're so long. And, you know, a guy like Tatum, the one thing that's impressed me and comparing it to Marcus Smart is Marcus Smart has been a way better shooter than he's ever been. You know, this year, I think he was at one point, he was like 40% from three.
Mm-hmm.
For him is ridiculous because we all saw that game seven against Cleveland where he couldn't hit the side of, you know, a barn. So his jump shot improving has cut. If his jump shot is where it is at 40%, they're going to be a problem for teams. Jason Tatum's a kid who can light up the, you know, the bucket and is a really underrated defender, really uses his body well, uses his hands well without fouling, contest shots. And he's a shot maker. You know, their problem is obviously still going to be how do you protect the rim because they don't really have one. And they haven't had one since Horford left, right? So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. What's your take, Phil? I know you're, it's one game, man. It's all good. You know how things go. You have that one goose egg. But what's your take on the Celtics? At least what you've seen in the bubble.
I'm going to be a good sport and participate, even though I told you I ain't going to talk about that game. So
I'll I'm not talking about the game, just the team. Look. Yeah.
Talk about the game.
Yeah.
Okay. honestly, I agree with you guys. They play a lot of small ball. I know, Daniel, you like that Daniel Theis guy because you guys have the same first name and stuff. but I think the Celtics – you know, they seem to like playing together. They play well together. Everybody knows their role. Stevens is a good coach. So, mm-hmm. You know, they kind of have it figured out. I don't know how deep they can get to. I don't think they can represent their Eastern Conference because I think if they do play a team like Milwaukee, Milwaukee's size is just going to dominate them way too much for them to even know what's going on with them. So I think Milwaukee will dominate them if they play Milwaukee, but I think them playing against Toronto, them playing against Miami, that's a 6 or 7 series that can go both ways.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. They definitely have a lot of stuff to kind of threaten the top of the East. I know we talk about Toronto a lot, especially being in that area and obviously being fans of them. Obviously, Phil being, you know, the number one sport fan outside of Nav Bhatia, but, you know, obviously.
I'm bigger than him, man. Forget him. He just got money.
Yeah, I guess so. But he pretty much, you know, you pretty much said it. This is a team that it wouldn't surprise me if they forced a game 7 with the Heat or the Raptors, but that Milwaukee series, to me, I know last year is a different story, but that size and that ability for Giannis to get downhill, I just don't know if you, especially with Omar saying that there's no Horford there, who protects the rim once that guy gets through? As much as you can spread your wingspan and look bigger by plugging the gaps, you know, we all know Giannis is near 7 foot. So if he can finish over people, then mm-hmm. it's going to be a long series.
Yeah, for sure. You can only wall off so much, and they do a great job of doing that. They communicate, and like to Phil's point, Kyrie leaving is probably the best thing to happen to that team, just because, you know, he was clearly just the guy who was just kind of bringing that team vibe down. You know, Tatum looks like a completely different player from when him leaving. And the usage rate between Kemba and Kyrie wasn't that crazy of a difference. It really just comes down to, you know, how they play together and how they work together. And you know, they're a good team, and they're going to push you, and they're going to probably make you go 6, make you go 7 in a series you don't want to play. But, yeah, until they get some rim protection and some little bit of help on their bench, because some of their bench players, like Watermaker's okay.
Langford, you know,
Langford's okay. They got some good players, but, you know, and the Hayward question is always big. I don't know how much they can play Hayward and Brown and Tatum against really elite teams. I think they get away with a lot of small teams. What they did against the Raptors, not that they got Phil, is that they can have the length to swallow a passing lane. So a guy like Kyle is going to have trouble getting into the lane against him. He's got to go through Marcus Smart and have guys collapsing on him. But like we said, Giannis going full out of steam, you know, good luck. Good night. You know, if you're not strong enough, you're not Bam. If you're not Yacht, if you're not Bam, you're not Horford, you're not Braun, you're not Kawhi. You know, those are probably the 4 or 5 guys you we've talked about over and over again who could even slow Giannis down.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's for sure. So, obviously, we talked about a lot today, touched upon, you know, TJ Warren, MPJ, 2 guys that have balled out. The Phoenix Suns, obviously, going 6-0. You know, regardless of what's going on, still impressive. It's good to see Devin Booker playing on a winning team. You know, hasn't really got the chance to do that since being at Kentucky. And pretty much Boston and Miami have been teams in the East that we've looked at and said, hey, where do they fit in the East? Where do they possibly, you know, have an impact on the top of the East? I'd like to thank these guys for once again tuning in and taking time out of their day to take part in this. OP and Philly Phil, good guests as always. Hope you guys enjoyed our basketball talk. Hope you guys are enjoying these games. You know, start to wind down. Got some playoff action going on soon. It's going to be intriguing. We'll definitely talk more as we go along. So thank you for tuning in to Daniel's Den. Take care, people.